This is the last stand on Earth.
And yes, it is the last stand on Earth and the last live radio program here on Saturday afternoon. Gary Freeman with Across America right here on KGAB.com. Glad to have you aboard with us on a Saturday afternoon. And if you're here in the Cheyenne area or anywhere near the area that we're in, what a beautiful, clear, sunny day it is. And we hope you're enjoying it as much as we are. And want to remind you that if you have friends or anybody outside the coverage area, simply call them. Tell them to go to KGAB.com and click on the live link, and they can listen to us anytime that they would like to. And we always welcome your phone calls. If you want to give us a call today, 632-6500. Or if you're outside the coverage area, it's 1-888-503-6500. Well, we're all pretty familiar with serial killers. We can think of Ted Bundy. We can think of some of these other people that have done the serial killing type of thing. Well, our next guest, he's a professor of clinical psychiatry at Columbia University's College of Physicians and Surgeons. He is a medical doctor, psychiatrist, and forensic psychiatrist, besides being a psychoanalyst, who specializes in evil. He is the author of The Anatomy of Evil and host of the Discovery Channel's former series, Most Evil. He is joining us today, and I'd like to welcome to Across America Dr. Michael H. Stone. Welcome to Across America, Doctor.
Thank you very much.
So how did you, what is it that interested you to get into this field that you're into?
Well, I started out being involved in personality disorders. I wrote books and worked with units in the hospital where there were borderline patients. And then I got more interested in some of the extremes of personality, because sometimes then law firms would invite me to serve as an expert witness in a case that supposedly involved a borderline patient or maybe somebody with some other personality disorder. Then I got asked to be an expert witness in a case involving the fatal vision doctor, Jeffrey McDonald, who killed his wife and two daughters. And that was the inspiration for me to start thinking of a kind of a scale of evil acts and evil people, starting with the least evil, so to speak, that you might consider like crimes of passion that are kind of understandable, jealousy murders and that sort of thing. And then at the other far end, people who, usually men, that just relish in torturing their victims. So I began to then write about people of that sort. I got invited eventually to participate in this Discovery Channel program as the host, going around the country interviewing some of these serial killers and mass murderers and whatnot. And then that served as a stimulus to write a book about such people.
I see. So we'll take a couple of cases that maybe a lot of the listeners in the audience are familiar with. We can think of Jeffrey Dahmer, who did despicable acts to people. And then you have, escapes my name, but the man who the Amityville Horror was named after, who basically shot up his whole family and walked down to the police station or to a neighbor's house and said, "Hey, I just shot up my whole family." You have Jeffrey Dahmer. This was kind of an ongoing thing, and not only that, but he was dismembering people's bodies and putting them in trash cans versus the other guy that just kind of snapped and shot up his whole family. Would you say that's a fairly balanced spectrum between the two, or does it go much farther either way?
No. Well, as I say, the fellow that shot up his family, that Amityville guy, he was somebody that had a lot of anger at the family and eventually killed the whole family and ultimately was arrested and put away. So he was like somebody that did an impulsive mass murder, actually. But Dahmer was, of course, a person of a different stripe. Dahmer was one of these rare individuals that had a condition similar to autism, but not the usual picture of a childhood autistic kid that could hardly even speak. Instead, he had, I think, what people nowadays call Asperger's syndrome, where they can't really form close, intimate friendships with people, and then they also have a singular preoccupation. So sometimes it's just recording train schedules or playing cyber baseball by the Internet. In his case, even from the age of five, Jeffrey Dahmer liked to see the inside of animals. He would carve up dogs and cats, and he liked to look at the different colors of their organs. And fast forward 15 or 20 years, and then he began doing the same thing. He would waylay or lure into his apartment adolescents and give them a Mickey, you know, a cocktail with alcohol and some pills that would make them unconscious. He would then strangle them to death and begin carving up their bodies, and he would then cook the heads so that only the bones of the skull remained, and he would paint the skulls different artistic colors, if you can imagine. And that's what the policeman, the poor policeman, that must have really been freaked out when they finally arrested him and opened the refrigerator, and there were these skulls staring at them. And he, as you were saying, he dismembered all the bodies of these 17 victims.
We're talking with Michael H. Stone, doctor, a professor of clinical psychiatry at the Columbia University College of Physicians, talking about some of the most evil or serial killers in Brooklyn. So tell us about Brooklyn. Was there a specific serial killer there, or what was kind of the premise for that?
Well, the situation in Brooklyn that unfolded 5 days ago involved a fellow that lived in this area of Brooklyn called Borough Park that's mostly lived in by Hasidic Jews who run a neighborhood that is extraordinarily safe. Nothing ever happens there. They're very pious, well-behaved people. And I think as a result, the mother of this poor 8-year-old boy didn't feel that the boy's request to walk a few blocks to meet her was too great a risk. And indeed, ordinarily, it wouldn't be too great a risk. In Manhattan, I wouldn't let my kids walk at age 8 or blocks.
I don't think I would either.
When they were 11, I let them take a bicycle to school. But anyway, in that very safe neighborhood, unfortunately, like a negative of winning the lottery, you know, the 1 in a 10 million chance, there happened to be a pedophile predator out there that liked to lure kids into his car or into his house. And this boy got lost. He was supposed to make an angle and turn 4 blocks to meet his mother, but instead he kept walking straight and got lost. And there wasn't anybody around except this predator guy, Levy Aaron. And he took him by the hand and ultimately took him to his apartment and tied him up, suffocated him, and then when he was dead, dismembered him and put some of the body in a bag and then inside of a suitcase and put it in a dumpster. And then he kept the feet as a trophy. We don't really quite know. It was pretty sick, whatever it is, in the refrigerator. Now, he had been luring other kids. Some mothers came forward and said, well, you know, if he tried to get my kid into his car or he tried to take my kid into his home. So he had done some bad things and with boys. So I assume he's some kind of a gay pedophile, either that or a pedophile or a man with no capacity to really form a lasting relationship with anybody, and somehow felt more comfortable with little kids, with boys, and rather than with adults. Although he had a couple of brief failed marriages, and finally, I think he was abusive to one of the women who kicked him out. So we don't know whether he's done crimes of that magnitude. Probably not before, because pretty hard to hide a murder. So this may be his first murder, but the guy is a very twisted character.
I would say so. I would say it's more than just a little bit of depression or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
But,
it's a very sick personality.
It's very sick. And yeah. Some people might even say reprobate.
Yeah, they might. That's right.
But I can tell you something that has been going on that I know will not cause you to be a serial killer, if you will. And this half hour of the program is sponsored by Joe Bees. That's J-O-E-B-E-E-S .com. Free range bee pollen, as many of you know, that I live a very active lifestyle. Matter of fact, a lot of times I just need to flat slow down and redirect my priorities. But, you know, that can really wear you down. It can drag you down. It can wear you down, get you very tired, especially if we're out eating fast food and we're not eating correctly. Well, I've been taking Joe Bees for about 3.5 months now, and I'll tell you what, it has done wonders for me. I feel great. I really feel good. And it's really heightened since I started taking this Joe Bees. And, you know, basically we have minerals and proteins and things like that that maybe the body is not always getting. Joe Bees supplies that, but in a natural way, natural bee pollen. And if you want to do it right now, you can get a 6-month supply plus 1 month absolutely free for $99, and that includes free shipping. So for $99, you're investing in your health, in your psyche, if you will, and, you know, we mentally feel great, we do better, we make better decisions, and on right now, $99 for a 6-month supply, plus 1 month free, plus free shipping, by simply calling 877-300-5632. That number again is 877-300-5632. Operators are standing by right now, so you can order it. $99, folks, that's nothing. People spend more of that on fast food and coffee. So $99 for 6 months, 1 month free, shipping is free, Joe Bees, or go to joebees.com. That's J-O-E-B-E-E-S.com. And for some of you that have been listening, you heard my story about the interviewer that I had some weeks ago. He had interviewed an aide of the Reagan administration who told this guy that I interviewed. He asked President Reagan, said, "Why are you so peppy? Why are you so alert and so full of energy?" Knowing that our good president was in his older ages at the time, and he simply answered back, he said, "Bee pollen." And I can echo that of President Ronald Reagan. Bee pollen works. I sleep good at night. You say, "Well, I'm struggling sleeping." Great. Pick up the phone right now, 877-300-5632, or go to joebees.com. That's J-O-E-B-E-E-S.com. You say, "Gary, what if I invest this $99 into my health and I don't like it?" That's fine. Joe Bees has 100% money-back guarantee, but I doubt you're going to have to use it, really, honestly. I haven't used it. I haven't had to send anything back. I love it. It helps me. Don't wait any longer. You've heard the ads. You've been contemplating it. Don't wait any longer. 877-300-5632 or go to Joe Bees, J-O-E-B-E-E-S.com. Feel great. Be great. Order you Joe Bees today. We've been talking with Dr. Michael H. Stone. He's a doctor. We've been talking about serial killers in Brooklyn. And, doctor, this is really weird. I mean, you're a doctor that studies this stuff. And please don't take this question the wrong way, but I guess from an outsider, having not dealt with having to prescribe psychotropic drugs and dealing with people that are like really bad cases of the whole psychiatric makeup, do you find yourself having to make sure you go back to your benchmarks so you don't kind of, you know, find yourself in a psychiatric whirlwind yourself dealing with these people all the time?
Well, I managed it pretty well, except when I began to interview for the Discovery Channel program.
Tell us.
There was one fellow down there in death row in Texas by the name of Tommy Lynn Sells. He had murdered approximately 70 people. Started out when he was about 14 years old in armed robbery where he killed a man from Natchez, Mississippi. But then he killed a lot of women, raped women. He would sometimes kill a whole family and throw a baby against the wall. So I had read books about him, and he was captured, actually, when he tried to sneak into a mobile home and slit the throats of two adolescent girls, one of whom survived, bleeding, of course, severely. And she managed to crawl to a home a little ways away, and they saved her, and she was able to give a picture and identify Tommy Lynn Sells, and so he was arrested at that point. Now, my feeling was when it was my turn to interview him, and when you interview somebody on death row, they have a 3-inch glass between you and the offender, and there's a telephone on your side and a telephone on his side. So my first thoughts was, I'd really like to kill this son of a bitch. So my first remark to Tommy was, well, Tommy, I guess I got these 3 inches of glass, so I don't kill you and you don't kill me. And he smiled and said, you got that right. but what amazed me was, first of all, he came from a really horrid background where he was terribly neglected by his mother and his aunt, and then he was raised by a pedophile that made him do sexual things with him when he was a kid. So it was about as awful a background as you could imagine.
Sure.
But Tommy, unlike some of the other people I interviewed, really expressed a measure of remorse. And he even said, when I asked him about that, he said, well, I do feel some remorse for what I did, but if I allowed myself to feel a whole lot of remorse, I'd have to kill myself. And I used to go around, before he told me that, around different places in the world lecturing, and I said, if somebody were some like Freud come to life again, or some genius therapist,
right,
who could actually restore to humanity one of these serial killer types, he'd feel so bad for what he did that he'd probably think about suicide. And there was Tommy Lynn telling me that. I thought, well, that's cool. I had some positive feeling for him because he was honest with me, unlike so many of the other people I interviewed. But that night, I had a scary dream that woke me up where I'm in a kind of a receiving line. You know how when a politician wins an election, the people line up to shake his hand.
Sure.
Except the politician was Hitler. Hitler was it was as if it was after the war. Somehow Hitler was still alive, and he was in an army uniform. And people are lined up, and I'm thinking, geez, whiz, I'm supposed to shake Hitler's hand. I feel like killing him. So I go over to another colleague of mine who's another well-known personality disorder expert, happened to come from Vienna. And as a little boy, he was actually in the street as a 10-year-old when Hitler came into Vienna. And so I went over to Dr. Kernberg, and I said, who was standing off to the side, I said, Otto, I said, you know, I'm supposed to hear shake Hitler's hand, but I feel like killing him. If I were to kill Hitler, would that be murder? And Dr. Kernberg said, well, in the case of Hitler, it would be all right.
That's a great story. We're talking with Dr. Michael H. Stone here on Across America about some of the serial killers that we've read about, what makes them tick. And we'll wrap up this interview when we come back right here on Across America. We'll be back right after this. And 2:27 is the time here, wrapping up our interview with Dr. Michael H. Stone about serial killers. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Stone. I got a question for you. Is there any hope for guys like this? I mean, when you hear people like, I think it was Ted Bundy, say, if they let me out, I will kill again. Is there any hope for these guys?
I don't believe so. Clifford Olson was another serial killer of children, 11 children in Vancouver. And a journalist once when interviewed him when he was in the Supermax prison they have in Vancouver. And the journalist asked Cliff, who, by the way, had 83 previous arrests before age 40 for thefts and robberies and all kinds of things. But then at 40, after he was out of prison for the umpteenth time, he embarked on a career of killing children, of raping and killing children. So the journalist asked him, Cliff, if you managed to get released one day, what would you do? He said, I take up where I left off. Now, that means that you don't want to ever let that guy go.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always think of the fact that, you know, as long as somebody's breathing, there's hope. But with some of these guys, I mean, when they just flat look you in the eye and blatantly tell you, I will kill again. You let me out of here and I will kill again. I mean, they're sending a signal, don't let me out. Lock me up, throw away the key.
As a matter of fact, Wesley Dodd in Washington State was a homosexual pedophile killer of four boys, or three or four boys, and he was put on death row, but then they, you know how they did it with death row these days, and it's not like when I was growing up when death row meant death row. But anyway, Wesley Dodd told the judge, says, if you let me out, I'd go right back to what I was doing. And he begged to be executed, and he was executed.
And probably rightly so. And you know, I'm sure you'd being a doctor and me caring about humanity, it's really very sad that we have to get to the place to where we say, you know, there's really no help for you, guy. But anyway, Dr. Stone, we really appreciate you carving out part of your Saturday afternoon to be with us here in the and across America. Do you have a website we can go to?
I don't, but I have. But on YouTube, you can get a lot of the segments of the Discovery Channel interviews and stuff. So that may be a way of being almost the same thing.
You bet. We'll be back right after this.